And yes, we still survive here on the stream. Some people, however, have failed to put on the prior audio files. So my apologies. You're tuned to the stream of freakradio.org. Coming up next, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides with a special series of guests in the studio, Jasmine and Shade Byron, to talk about an assault by a police officer with a loaded pointed gun 2 days ago at the Salvation Army Thanksgiving meal. So stay tuned.
The hallway, or problem, for only one reason. That president raises a question, who wants a plan? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason. Our president raises a question, who wants a plan? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? Through all imperialism? Who owns the land? Will someone please tell me?
Is Free Radio Santa Cruz, actually the stream of Free Radio. We are online again with the, we've got some guests in the studio. We've got Jasmine and Shade Byron. We have Magic Box's own Colin Campbell Clyde, and of course, sorry?
Hi.
Hi. Say something else. I want to see if we actually have you on the
if you actually have me on the mic.
Yeah, a little louder. A
little sound check testing.
Oh, boy.
Type thing. Is it? Oh, no. Is it working?
Louder.
Does the microphone work?
My microphone works. Ah, dear.
Yeah, I believe this one works as well.
It's working, but it's not working as well as it should
be. This is quality radio right here.
This is the best that you can get, really.
It's really got its problems at different points, I have to admit. But all right, well, we're going
to
try.
We're not pretending to be perfect.
You get what you pay for. Nothing. Pay nothing.
Interesting. Now we suddenly... All right, so one more time. Testing microphone over here.
Hey, can you hear the microphone over here?
Yes, we can. I can hear your microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see the meter.
Looks like we're good. Okay, folks. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. If you're listening on Thanksgiving, we're going live, and you can call in with your own comments, thoughts, experiences, and reports, which is what's most important to me. Reports from the street, reports from where you are that we wouldn't know about, that you think the community needs to know about. The phone number to call in is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772, and you can all talk together. These four people are in the studio, or at least three of them, because of an incident that I learned about this morning when I finally got my defective answering machine apparently working or deciding to work, and learned of an incident that happened on Tuesday at the Salvation Army's Laurel Street Thanksgiving feed, or pre-Thanksgiving feed. And I think I will turn it over to Jasmine to give an account of what happened to her at the meal. Perhaps you can begin before the excitement and build up to the excitement. Possibly you could supply musical background. Actually, we don't need musical background. It's a pretty dramatic and unfortunate incident, to say the least. Go ahead, Jasmine.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Robert. Glad to be on the show. Technical difficulty. Hello? Yeah. Am I good?
You're good.
Okay. Glad to be on the show. Yeah, I definitely think that this is a community issue. At 721 Laurel Street at the Salvation Army, they do their yearly Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, second year in a row, too, for us.
Second year in a row that my husband and I have been going. My husband actually was a participant in the Clutch Carriers bike race and donated $30 to pick up food for the event.
A couple events across town that were actually supplying food for either people without money or homeless people to you know, go get a free meal, you know, for Thanksgiving, supplied various feeds around town.
And because we were contributors, we wanted to go down and see if there's any way we could help out or just participate in the meal because we're both low income.
This was your second experience at the Salvation Army?
Or? Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
And last year, was it on a Thanksgiving, or was it one of the prior Thanksgiving days?
I believe it was before, if I remember correctly.
And how big was the crowd in the meal?
I'd say like 20 to 30 people, probably.
Yeah.
A lot of workers, though. I mean, a ridiculous amount of workers. Like, and all watching you, too, watching everybody just standing around, just being awkward. It was kind of weird, actually.
Yeah, we actually referred to them before the incident as the Gestapo because they were standing with their arms crossed menacingly.
Watching us eat, yeah.
At both of the exits, and we were making jokes, you know, like, oh, better watch out. They might tackle us or try to hurt us or something. Because every year, because I have health problems, when I go there with my mother, because we went when I was a child, you know, for any kind of Salvation Army event, they usually let us take food home, even though they're not supposed to.
If you don't finish it.
If you don't finish it, because I have health issues where I can't eat a lot of food all at once, and they're lenient on it with me because I'm a Santa Cruz local and a contributor to their events and somebody who volunteers occasionally, just a basic supporter. And
we should also say that you're a street performer.
Oh, yeah. My husband and I are both in the Dirty Pines. We play on Pacific Avenue all the time.
A fine group, which I've played before on Free Radio.
Which,
but
we appreciate.
Without your CD, I might add.
You had to record it yourself because we're losers and we cannot properly record our stuff lately.
And record a CD. We'll have to get a CD from you. Because you really
just
are.
Go ahead and call in with the recording opportunities around town and just leave your number for this.
Well, you can come into the studio and record here. Of course, it won't be the highest fidelity, for sure.
Oh, that's not. We don't even care.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, welcome to come in on a Sunday. I do a show on this Sunday. If you want to come in and bring guitars back up, perhaps a small audience, a chorus of some kind.
Bring my banjo, should bring a fiddle.
That'd be fun.
You really are a good group. I mean, I've enjoyed listening to you. And
he's been listening to us for years in all of our groups.
You're pointing to Daniel.
I mean, a while. Mm-hmm. He's met us through music, so.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I come across you in the farmer's market. I come across you on Pacific Avenue. I know that you've had concerns about the street performers' sidewalk shrinking ordinances.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We try to show as much support as we could.
But Dell Williams Jewelers thinks enough of you that they wouldn't... did you not have their permission to play in their alcove at one point? Is that right? I'm not sure.
They let us be there.
No, they were pretty cool. It was actually the Pacific Trading Company who gave us a lot of trouble, just because they want their doors open for business, because they say it's better for business, and they say when we play out front, I understand that it gets loud, and we respect the one-hour law, but they'll come out and complain and slam the doors in our face before whenever. Hours even up.
But not Dell Williams.
No, I've never gotten any trouble from them.
And this is usually, we're talking about playing at night when they're closed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well. Yeah.
My point is that you are, your music is sufficiently, well, I don't know if they're listening to your music because they're not around, but mm-hmm. I like your music and that's good enough for me.
Well, thank you.
Uh-uh.
Yes. So I know that when I went to the homeless meal tonight at the Civic, there was, I guess, Jay and others were playing on the stage, another street performer.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been, asked to play at the Salvation Army as a group? Or?
Last year, remember?
I don't recall, but we've played at the Loud Nelson and stuff for the feeds there that happens for the elderly feeds and stuff like that happen. We've played there before for them, but Salvation Army we never have played, but I believe we had an offer that we probably didn't do.
There seems to be a disagreement. You, on the other hand, Jasmine, think that perhaps you did play and there was a blackout on your part?
Huh? Oh, no, we didn't play, but yeah, they said that we could if we wanted to, which was really nice.
And has it always been a small feed at the Salvation Army? Has it been a small number? You said there were 20 people there on this Tuesday we're talking about.
Yeah,
20 plus.
Yeah, I mean, if even that, 25 max, maybe, People are in and out, so.
So let's then now proceed to, you sat down with your mom and her husband, or her?
Her friend.
Yeah, her friend.
And you were all kind of, what kind of a good meal, fairly decent meal, or how was it?
It was free. It wasn't slop, but it was, it was like the free meal they do, and it's the basic traditional
turkey
and cranberry sauce and all that stuff. And there was one gentleman there, the taller gentleman who with a mustache. I actually commented on his mustache. He was extremely nice, mm-hmm. and he was really cool. All the other workers there, though.
There was the woman that was sweet too.
Yeah, the other
who afterwards came out crying, grabbed me by the shoulder, and said, "I will never support Salvation Army again. I've been doing feeds here for several years."
I guess we should probably get to the point too. Why that happened.
So I want you individually to tell these stories, and then you can because you may have different accounts, which is fine. Mm-hmm. There are always differences crop up because we got different eyes, and
different perspectives, exactly.
Yeah, people
different
see different things, and also they'll often tell you. The judge will tell you in court if you're sitting on a jury. If you hear different accounts or witnesses, that doesn't mean one is lying. It just means they're seeing things from a different perspective. And people have different, they put together things differently, too, when they perceive things. But what we're talking about is a police assault. And that's a very serious matter to me. That's why I asked you to come to the studio. I even had some doubts about having you speak because your account, once it goes on the air, on the stream, on the audio file here, is something that... anyone can access, and if the city has to defend itself against a lawsuit, which I kind of hope it does, they will probably look at whatever they can to find out what to trip up your lawyers.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why we're worried about the tapes because supposedly there's a tape of there's a couple cameras there, of course, one not in the hallway, but that recorded a lot of the account. And we're kind of worried about that.
We hope it recorded. You're told it was recorded. You haven't seen.
Yeah, we were told that there was cameras there and there's a tape.
Right. There was one woman who was working there who is a friend of my mother and a friend of her friend, and she's been working there for a great number of years, and she said specifically that she viewed the tapes and that she was taking them home to burn them. So if those tapes
burn them, meaning to make a copy,
to make copies,
a copy.
Yes,
to
yeah.
throw them in
no,
the
not,
fire.
No, not at all.
Correct.
So if those tapes are gone, I would definitely say something's up.
Yeah. So let's who wants to give their account first?
You go for it, man.
Okay,
go ahead.
I will. So after we sat there eating our food,
trying to eat.
You know, it's really hard for me to eat a great deal of food. I just can't do it. My constitution is not that great. I weigh 117 pounds. You know, I'm almost 5'8". I'm just a very small person. I can't eat that much.
Is this a specific ailment you have it as a name? Is it some sort of anorexia?
No, not at all.
Kind of eating disorder
she
or anything like that.
She has a small stomach. I have trouble eating a bunch of food.
Just,
I mean, they give you a lot of food. They give you, like, a mound of food, and they bring you pie, and it's like, you're looking at it, and you're like, I can't believe they're going to waste all of this, but you know they're letting the workers there take all the leftovers home afterwards, you know what I mean? And it was never clear to us that we couldn't take anything out. Just to put your turn, Shade, will come.
Go ahead, Jasmine.
So, you know, we went there the year before, and I've been there when I was younger, and they always let me take some food home, just because my constitution is kind of sickly and thin, and it's never really been a problem. Even one of the people serving said, well, I don't think it should be too big of a deal. And I had my jacket over my arm, and I had a plate of food in my hand, and I walked up to the door with my husband, who had a book in his hand and his jacket over his arm, and there was a man standing there. I didn't notice that he was wearing any kind of uniform. All I noticed was that he was wearing a black t-shirt tucked into his pants with a belt and boots, and that he was Hispanic with short black hair, and there was some kind of emblem on his shirt, which later on I found out to be the Santa Cruz Police Department seal with his name and badge number on it, but it was screen printed on.
Is anyone else around?
Oh, yeah, there were servers on either side of him. My husband was right next to me.
Not to cut in on her story, but one of the servers actually walked up to him as we were walking up to tell on us that we had food.
And were you concealing the food, or was it...
My jacket was partially over the plate of food, but it was not...
Definitely not hidden.
Were you tiptoeing out?
No, not at all.
No, we were
wearing soft moccasins, perhaps.
No. Had my boots on, you know.
And you've been told by the workers, or at least one worker,
that this was not a problem.
In the past, it had not been a problem.
Never,
not at all. And
well, these are new times we live in, you know, Jasmine. Go ahead.
And I guess that there is a rule that they could lose their license to serve food if people take food outside. But we watched several people take plates of food out before us, and outside. I wish I would have taken a picture, because outside, everyone knows at this feed, whoever was there, that there are plates littering the ground outside from the feed inside. And because if there are people that can't go in because they're disabled, or if they have dogs, or if they just want to eat outside, they will serve them food outside. The food leaves the building, most definitely.
Now, did you have a dog with you?
No, I did not at the time.
Because I know that you occasionally do have a dog with you.
Yes.
Most of the time.
The name of that dog is?
Amici.
Amici. I remember, actually, I played an interview with you, I think, about a week ago, where Amici didn't get any... much time, but was referred to. So you approached and found an individual standing in the doorway with two servers, what, to the right and the left?
Yes, and my mother and her partner were to my... They were to my...
They were kind of behind us a little
bit. Yeah, they were to the left and behind me, and my husband was to my right. And this man... grabs my jacket and slaps the plate of food out of my hand, and the food goes flying everywhere. It goes all over me, it goes all over the wall, all over the ceiling, all over the ground.
All over the officer? Because it turned out he was an officer, Officer Hernandez, I believe.
Yes, badge number 137.
Ah, go ahead.
And he grabbed my jacket, and I was holding this plate of food, and I was just kind of in shock. Because at this point, I did not know he was a police officer. I thought that he was just some aggressor. There's a bunch of people there from all walks of life. I didn't know if he was drunk. I didn't know if he was on drugs. I didn't know he was a cop. And he wasn't wearing an apron, so it wasn't clear to me that he was there volunteering. All I knew was that he was standing in my way, and I said, you know, I dropped the plate of food. Basically, I didn't know what else to do but release it from my hand, because I couldn't give it to either of the servers. They were standing there in shock, and he had just been aggressive towards me, so I didn't know what to do but drop it on the ground.
So he didn't actually knock the plate out of your hand, but he knocked some of the food off the plate?
Well, there was a plate on top of it. Their plate with food on it, with a plate on top of it, and he knocked off most of the food and the plate on top.
I see.
So I just dropped the other plate on the ground. I didn't know what to do, because apparently the food was really offensive to him, offensive enough for him to become violent. I have PTSD. I've been diagnosed with this. You know, I have an issue with people making fast movements towards my face and being violent and knocking things out of my hand. I just didn't know what to do. My mother also has clinical PTSD and has been reliving this event over and over again. But I managed
to... This happened on a Tuesday afternoon. Today is Thursday.
You know, as somebody who... I deal with PTSD in my everyday life.
This is Colin speaking.
I just want to say that, if people are being, really aggressive and confrontational around you, that can, totally trigger this physiological, emotional reaction that really just feels awful. And that's something that I hope people out there can be really conscientious about is, when you encounter somebody, you don't know what their personal background of what they've been through is like, and our actions have an effect on the people around us, so just be responsible and don't go around being a macho aggro.
That's all it was, a prick wave. That's all it was for him. He was just trying to prove that he had authority, over people, and that's it. That's all it was.
But it goes far beyond even that.
So again, where we're at in this narrative is you were astonished, baffled, and probably alarmed that the food had been knocked partially out of your hand. You dropped the plate, and was anything said either before or during this encounter up to this point?
Well, he asked me what was in my hand, and he asked me if he could search my jacket, and I had told him, this is a feed, this is a charitable feed, and I don't know who you are, and I don't feel comfortable with you touching me. And that's when he grabbed my belongings and slapped the food out of my hand, and slapped my husband's jacket out of his hand.
For no reason.
And grabbed
it. Almost knocked my book out of my hand, too.
Almost, yep. And I grabbed for my jacket, and he wouldn't give it to me. And he started to, I guess he was feeling it to see if I had weapons or something in there, which he found nothing, so he gave back to me. And I grabbed my jacket and walked past him and said, you're lucky I don't have a weapon. You're lucky I don't have mace, because you're scaring me right now. And he said, oh, I'm lucky about the mace. And he proceeded to reach down, unclip his gun, take off the safety, put a bullet in the chamber, and point it directly at my eye socket.
Now you see that he pulled it. Where did he get the bullet out of?
Oh, well, he cocked it back. He had a. I'm pretty sure that his magazine was full.
So you didn't see him actually put the bullet in, but you saw him cock the gun?
Yeah, I saw him take off the safety.
He took off the safety and loaded the gun.
It's a Glock.
A clip. Yeah, it was a Glock 38.
In the sense that he didn't pull out a clip and put a new clip in.
He just saw.
Your understanding. I'm no weapons expert, but you obviously have had.
Yeah.
I was looking at
the gun the entire time this was going on, watching his fingers and everything, and.
There's a very distinct movement when somebody puts a bullet in a chamber of a Glock 38. It's a very distinct movement where they grab the top of it and they make a sliding motion, and you watch the clip load itself.
Now, have you seen this because you had experience with these weapons, or?
I've had experience with guns before, and my husband was raised in a military family. And I would not have been able to tell what kind of gun he had if he wouldn't have taken it out and waved it in my face, I'll tell you that.
So, where were you? Do you say you walked past him with presumably with your coat, but without the food?
Oh, yes, without the food. Which was
carefully avoiding sliding on the potatoes that were now on the floor.
Actually, yes.
And there were the people. There were people to his right and his left. Did they stand aside? Did they attempt to block you?
They actually ended up lying for him.
Right, but what did they do physically? Did they attempt to block?
They smiled.
So were you past them as well when this happened?
Yeah, into the hallway on the way out, trying to be, okay, well, we're leaving now. Thank you. As we're leaving, this is happening.
After this incident where he confronted you in the hallway, right?
He confronted us in the dining room.
Yeah, in the doorway of leaving the dining room.
At that point, you passed him after the food was knocked out of your hand.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and that happened in the dining room.
Yes.
And then you walked out into the hallway. And in the hallway, were there anyone in the hallway at this moment?
Yeah, there were other servers, there were other witnesses, people that were leaving from eating there. There was my mother and her partner and my husband right next to me, two of our friends, and the servers were a little bit behind the officer at this point. They had gotten behind him.
Still in the dining area?
They're kind of like half in, half out,
In just transition.
In the doorway. And we were past that. They were kind of staying back.
And so how far did you get down the hallway before you noticed this gun situation?
Probably about 3 feet.
And were you looking back? How would you have noticed that he had a gun if you were walking forward?
I looked back when I said, you know, you're lucky I don't have any mace, to try and maybe talk to him, to, you know, see if maybe he understood that he was being too aggressive, because I thought surely he's just snapping because he's had a hard day, mm-hmm. and he will understand this, you know, coming from a smaller woman, that I'm not a threat. And
how much taller was he than you?
I don't know.
He was actually about a foot shorter.
Yeah, he's a pretty small guy, which might be contributing.
Probably not a foot shorter, because that would make him 4 feet.
yeah.
But, I mean, I'm pretty tall, so to me it seemed like he was pretty short.
He's probably a few inches smaller than me, but he is way, way bulkier. Obviously, this man could take me out.
And better armed, apparently.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because you didn't know about the small pistol in your shoe. Right?
Exactly.
Right, the shoe gun that we don't get to hear about. Probably one of the, maybe it was a bomb in the shoe.
No. I had no weapons on me, none.
Now, how were you, you walked to several feet, you turned around, you made this comment to him. He then did what?
He unclipped his gun, and I thought, well, okay, surely he's just going to put his hand on his gun. He's not going to take it out. And then I saw him take his gun out. And then I saw him take off the safety, and I saw him pull it back and put a bullet in the chamber, and he waved it right in my face, and right as he flashed it onto my right eye socket, about an inch away from my face, I put up my hands with my jacket over my shoulder and turned around, and he jabbed it into my back, into my spine, right about where my heart would be. And I turned around again because I could not believe what he was doing. And I wanted to make some comment, like, you're really going to try to shoot me over some food?
Now, at this point, had anyone else said anything? Was there any comments from anyone else?
Not that I can remember, but also keep in mind that I'm in a situation right now where there's a loaded gun with someone's finger on the trigger pointed right at me. And everyone that I love more than anything in the world is standing there watching it happen. And that's the most terrifying part for me, is that my loved ones have to see that.
So, Weston.
I turned around again, and he waved it in my face, so I just got out. I just standing there with their eyes like they could not believe what
was
happening.
And simply walked away.
Walked outside, stood outside of the front door, and not the front door, but the back entrance to
How many feet away from the original dining hall area was this, would you estimate?
About, what do you say, 15 feet?
Yeah, 15, 20 feet.
About 15 to 20 feet, mm-hmm. And then I was about 6 feet outside when he finally put his gun away, and my husband said, you know, you're insane, let me get your name and your badge number.
Yeah, I was just
but
immediately,
it,
like, what's your phone?
But it even gets crazier than that. When we were standing across the street calling Fox 35 News.
Left the property.
He pulls up in a minivan.
Okay, how much later is this?
Oh, I'd say, like, maybe 7 minutes, 10 minutes at the most after the incident.
So how did Fox News get to hear about this?
They just happened to be in... Well, I tried to call them and couldn't get a hold of them, but at this point I'm on the phone trying to call them. And they just happened to be right outside the police station for some reason. I don't know why, but they were just kind of there. There was a woman working on another story, and I knocked on the window and told her what happened, and she interviewed me.
How long was the interview?
I made one short statement, so probably less than 6 minutes.
Did it ever get out on the air, do you know?
I'm not sure at this point. It's either supposed to air tonight or tomorrow, and if it doesn't air tomorrow, it's not going to air.
And did the police interview, was Officer Hernandez interviewed as well?
No. Hernandez was at the station, but then left very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about something, this was later, actually.
This was later.
Yeah, afterwards
so
I went to police station.
Let's go back to the scene. You came out of the building, the officer was waving his gun at you. Was there a door that closed as you left the building?
I think...
You walked through the door, Strasen.
Yeah, the back door. The back door, when you leave from inside to outside the building, there's a glass door.
Did the officer say anything as you were going out, or was there anything else he did? Did he follow you?
He threatened to arrest me multiple times because I was telling him, you know, what the fuck are you doing pulling a gun
where
out?
Where were you when you made these comments to him?
In the process of... I was behind her. I was watching this happen, and she was at the door in front of me. He was right in front of me. She was to the right, because you're thinking, you know, you're coming out of the cafeteria. You have to take a right to leave out the back door.
And you say it's about... how long is the hallway?
The hallway's probably about 7 feet or so, mm-hmm. you know. So she's at the door, and she's just, you know, like she said, put her hands up and is leaving. And I'm standing there looking right at him, being like, you know, what are you doing? Ask him
did
his badge number and all that.
Did he attempt to follow her? Did he just stand there? What did he do?
He stood there, put his gun away, and just threatened me over and over. Yeah.
You're not asking him if he followed me down the hallway, are you? Or are you asking him?
I'm wondering while he apparently, as I understand it, you left, whereas you.
I was following her on the way out. We were all just trying to get out.
And then you followed, and the officer Hernandez did not follow as you guys walked out.
He didn't follow us across the street. No, not at all.
He didn't. Did he follow you out of the building?
No, he stood at the doorway.
Yeah, he stood at the door. He stayed in the doorway.
In the doorway.
Originally he was at the doorway of the cafeteria, which is, they were both wide open, so people can come in and out. That was the original doorway they were blocking. This doorway, like I said, is when you take a right out of that cafeteria door.
So did he follow you to the second doorway?
He stopped there.
Okay, so you once outside, what did you do?
I went across the street and I asked to use the neighbor's phone from the apartment complex that's across the street from the Salvation Army. And as I'm using their phone, I'm standing on the street with my mother, who is having a panic attack at this point, and her partner, who pretty much is doing the same, saying, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Several people came out. An old Mexican man patted me on the shoulder and said, I'm so sorry. And I said, you saw him point a gun at me, didn't you? And he said, yes, and I'm so sorry. And
did you get his name?
I did not get his name.
He barely could speak
English. And then two other women who were servers, whose names I did not get, came out. One of them was crying and said, I will never support the Salvation Army again. But as we were outside and I was trying to get a hold of Fox 35, Officer Hernandez comes up in a...
This is about 7 minutes, 8 minutes after the incident, enough time for him to grab his things, get in his vehicle, and leave. So it happened very quickly after that incident. He was obviously embarrassed or knew he did something wrong, and he left very quickly.
He had an emergency call.
Oh, yeah, of course he did.
Away.
When he was off duty volunteering at the Thanksgiving dinner, he had an emergency call.
Now, what kind of clothing was he wearing?
A black T-shirt with the emblem of the Santa Cruz, SCPD on it.
Yeah, I saw it. He had his badge on his left side. With the badge number on it, but that was it. Just had the badge number.
Yeah, and to me, it looked silkscreened on, and it could have just been a supporter. You know, it could have been a security thing. I have found, I found those in the trash before. I've found Santa Cruz Fire Department emblem shirts, you know, in free boxes. Anyone can get them. Just because you have one of those on does not mean that you are a police officer. You could have found it anywhere.
But you said he had a visible gun.
At the point in time when he was being aggressive, I didn't notice his gun, but it was on a holster on his hip.
On his right side.
So he came up, he drove up in a vehicle. Was this on the private property or in the street?
This was in the street because we were across the
street. We were across the street at the car that we had arrived in parked.
You're going to allow her to give her account first.
Well, I mean, he's not giving her all the information. So.
No, I know, and you're going to give more information. Okay. But I want you to do it as much as you can independently. But actually, we haven't been doing that, but I'm going to try to encourage that. Go ahead.
But we were across the street in front of the apartment complex that is right across the street there, and I explained to the neighbors what had happened, and I asked to use their phone, and as I'm standing there, Officer Hernandez pulls up, and my friend's car, which is a white four-door something, is in the street, and he's hanging out of his window, and I ask if I can use his cell phone instead of the one I'm on, because the one I'm on is dying, and he's in the process of telling me that his phone is dying, when there's a car that pulls up behind him, and it keeps honking and honking and honking, and we keep saying, just go around, and finally we realize it's Officer Hernandez. And so my friend pulls over, and my mother says to Officer Hernandez, from the sidewalk, you just pointed a gun at my only child for no reason. And he leans out his window and says, yep, I sure did, and it was awesome. Woo-hoo! And then turns on his lights and his siren in his minivan, in his gray minivan, and speeds away, tires screeching.
Impressive.
Yep.
Impressive.
That's very manly of him.
Professional behavior. So
he even had a mustache to go with it.
Is that in the police procedure rule book to just go around aiming guns at random
people? I'll have to consult and talk to Chief Vogel about that.
And then, the other thing I'm wondering, hearing the stories, you guys said he's off duty.
Yeah,
volunteering.
Yeah.
Like, why do you need a gun to go to the Salvation Army?
I mean, I could actually...
street performers are pretty notoriously dangerous.
I can understand, because, it's a free feed. There was a lot of drug addicts and people and random people, just tons of random people. I can understand. I honestly can understand it.
Different free feeds in town and hung out with all those crazy, depraved drug addict people, and I don't carry a gun around.
I haven't seen you. I was at the meal today, which had hundreds of people, and I saw no one there with a gun.
Not a single M16. To
nor
be
did I see
no shotguns
at any prior event
necessary.
At
I
the
mean,
Civic or at the Vets Hall. But again, let me ask you now, because I did suggest that you allow Jasmine to give her account. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add that you noticed that you think may have been missed in this account, or that you had a different perception of yourself, Shade?
Well, let's see. Going back over what she said, yeah, I mean, I noticed that his gun was a Glock, which later the police asked when she was giving her account to the police chief or somebody over there, did you see what kind of gun that he had? And she was like, yeah, it was a Glock. And I told her before, like, he had a Glock, and she noticed it as well. And they were like, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what he had. But, yeah, I mean, the whole thing, when he came up screeching in the car, honking at the other car, we didn't notice it was him until I kind of walked into the street to see him. Be like, we were like, dude, just go around. Why aren't you just going around?
He was dressed as he was before.
Oh yeah, but we couldn't see. It was getting dark out at the time. Mm-hmm. Until I walked up to the window. What's that?
About what time was this?
Right at sundown. Sun was like just getting to the point where.
This was Tuesday, November 26th.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, and that
was on the street.
Blackburn Street, I believe.
That's Blackburn Street, right near Laurel Street.
Yes, exactly, Laurel, and you can actually see the field to your left.
Did you have any conversations with her? Hear any conversations about the people who were listening, watching, or around the area when this was happening?
I talked to. There was one fellow there with his guitar. I saw the whole thing. Who just said that was. Really, really messed up, and can't believe we're always getting messed with. I mean, stuff like that. Every time he sees us, somebody's messing with us. But, there was another, what?
That other kid that came up and said, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, and I talked to a guy, I forget his name, actually, long hair, rides his bike a lot, at the farmer's market yesterday. He said he saw the whole incident where it got slapped out of her hand, and he slapped my coat out of my hand. All that, but he did not see the gun part because that proceeded into the hallway as that part. The doors were open, but as he pulled out the gun, it was in the hallway. So,
without naming the names of the witnesses, since I'm concerned about, I know we have a fine police department, but you never can tell what kind of pressures can go against mm-hmm. different witnesses. And without revealing the numerous video that was taken of this by these different witnesses, that may not wish to reveal, but that may be shown as evidence with respect to the police department. And there, I think also there's video in the actual,
we were told there was
Salvation Army itself, which presumably can be helpful. And maybe Officer Hernandez, for his own photo album, took a few shots, video shots.
It's funny because this was the first day I decided I'm not going to need my phone. I'm just going to leave it at home. We're going to a Thanksgiving.
Always carry your phone.
Yeah.
It was also
I always do, except that day.
It was also the first time I decided not to go with my service animal, which I have for emotional reasons for having violence thrust upon me before in previous situations, and it was something that my mother actually commented on. I'm so proud you don't have your service animal with you this time.
Well, your mother doesn't like the service animal?
No, she's just proud that she's making progress, that she,
nothing wrong with having your service animal with you?
Nothing wrong at all.
No, I don't.
Everybody seems to think so everywhere we go, even though she's the
rumors
sweetest.
Are there service animals in the neighborhood. That's just a rumor, of course. All right, so you're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz in the studio. We've been talking with Shade Jasmine, the Silent Daniel, and the occasional interrogator, Colin Campbell Clyde. Colin,
Silent Daniel's from Canada, by the way.
Is anybody, Colin, you looking restless over there. Is there any questions or comments you wanted to make about any of this?
Well, this sounds to me, based on your account, like somebody who maybe isn't the most mature person to be dealing with.
I've heard from numerous people he's new to the force.
And
so.
Just
cocky.
if somebody's gonna do something like that, like just reach for their gun over some minor insignificant thing, I think that the city bears a responsibility here to really look into what the hell's going on with this guy before he actually really hurts somebody. And if that were to happen in the future after we've sat around and had this discussion about it, not only would that be incredibly tragic, but it would be a gross negligence on the part of the city.
Let me kind of amp things up a little, or what I think is put them in a different and I think more realistic, although that's the kind of perspective that many perhaps mystified by the police department mystique wouldn't have. If somebody stood at a door, pulled out a gun, and began threatening you, that's what we call an assault.
Oh, and also slapping things out of your hand for no reason.
That is assault and battery. So it's not a matter of, gee, yeah, this guy needs to be trained. Gosh, he's a newbie. He needs some more experience. No, he needs to be put in jail for this kind of behavior. He needs to be charged like any other citizen would be charged, particularly since he's not engaging in, well, if he's engaging in official police duty, it's a toss-up to decide whether it's worse because he's using the color of his office to cover this kind of abuse, or in theory, well, maybe he's got some legitimate purpose.
He also...
Before you say that, because... He isn't doing that. He isn't representing the police force there, at least maybe he was. But if he wasn't, if he was acting as a private citizen, he simply assaulted you. And he battered you. And he should be either in jail or on bail or charged and certainly suspended from duty pending these charges. Interestingly enough, you later went to the police station to make a complaint about this, and we learned that the individual who interviewed you was none other than our old friend, Officer Vasquez.
That is correct.
The man who slammed down Richard Hardy to the sidewalk in handcuffs.
I just kind of spun him. I don't know. I just kind of spun him.
Anyway, but you had a thought.
Just in the middle of it all, when I was asking him his badge number and his name.
Hernandez
137, by the way. He told me, I immediately after asking him his badge number, he told me, he referred to me as being racist because I asked him that. I was like, excuse me? I'm like, no, you're a cop, and I should be able to know your name and your, you know, because he was Hispanic. And he, for some reason, thought that I was being racist asking him his name and his badge number.
It reminds me of a question I had while you were talking earlier, Jasmine. Did he express any unusual interest? Did he overhear you say, for example, that looked like the Gestapo or guarding the doors? Or you have piercings in your ears and your ears. And I don't know if you have your ears, not hairs covering your ears, but your nose. Apparently you have a hollow ears. This is very suspicious, but we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, we're just, you know, we're
and
trouble.
And you, too. You have a nose ring, Mr.
I mean, we've got tattoos on our face, all kinds of good stuff.
You're also wearing glasses, four eyes. So that's right.
And so, I'm also, I guess, a faggot, people say a lot, too.
Yeah, faggot guy. Yeah. Ooh,
tranny is a good one, too.
Oh, okay. Well,
yesterday
it's getting worse and worse here, obviously. You can see where you
the layers went. Just stack on.
So, in other words, was there any possible motivation for this based upon the prior conversations you were having, based upon the attitude you have, perhaps a disrespectful attitude towards the security of the Salvation Army?
I really don't think so, because every time we go there, we joke and are extremely nice and extremely grateful to every single server, and they actually don't hire security, I was told after I was there, Officer Hernandez was not there working security, that they could have as many private security officers as they wanted there, because of how much respect the Salvation Army gets, that for those type of events, it would probably happen free of charge, but they choose not to have them. That was what I was told, and that if there were any officers there, that maybe they were there because there's at-risk youth that might want to volunteer, and maybe there's probation officers or something to that extent, but that they do not hire the Santa Cruz Police Department as security. So he was not there on security detail as far as I know, and as far as I was told. If that's misinformation, then it was because I was given misinformation by somebody who works there, but as far as I know, that's how it is. And I don't think so, because we are on really good standing with a lot of the volunteers, and personally know a lot of the volunteers and supporters of the Salvation Army. We ourselves were supporters of the Salvation Army, still are. I'm not holding it against them. But I don't think he would have heard us saying that. We pretty much, we were just talking, you know, amongst ourselves. We weren't making any kind of comments towards anyone there.
He called you racist, or he called you racist, mm-hmm. Shade. And indeed, we all have racist problems because we are in a racist society, and you know, sometimes one can be unconsciously racist. A lot of the time, I know I probably am. And
I believe he only thought I was asking his badge number and name because he, for some reason, pulled the race card. Oh, I'm Hispanic. That's the only reason he's asking. Like, if he was white, it would have made a difference. He pulled a gun on my wife. You know? No.
Yeah, I think it had more to do with, I think what, of course, what needed to be done immediately at the scene was for you to call the police and ask to have him arrested. Because it's a guy who assaulted you. It's very simple. He assaulted and battered you.
Actually, I believe someone did call the police.
And he endangered
and
other people in so doing.
Well, somebody did call the police, actually. And they never showed up.
There's already a cop there.
Yeah.
We don't have to
stop. Oh, but he's speeding away, though, at that time. As we're calling on him, he's taking off. Yeah.
He was fleeing the scene of the crime.
He definitely fled. Definitely, because there was still people eating there. There was, you know, another hour and a half of the meal. Why would he leave all of a sudden? This is weird.
I'm done volunteering now that I pulled this gun.
Yeah. Sudden indigestion of some kind, possibly. But bad odor, bad taste.
I've done my work for the day, you know? Like, scoop some spaghetti.
And while we
I waved my prick around, proved that I have authority.
You know, there's nothing more to do. While we can, leave.
While we joke about this, and we should, of course, you know, to lighten the mood, this has had rather serious consequences. Your mother, who I spoke with earlier today, told me that she has been unable to sleep. She's had headaches. Or maybe I'm thinking of you who've had the headaches.
I didn't sleep that night either.
Yeah, my husband didn't sleep. My mother's friend almost went to the hospital. I thought he did go to the hospital, but it ended up that he just went to his house. He has heart problems. He had a collapsed lung last year, and this kind of stress on his body he cannot handle. I talked to him about it today, and he almost burst into tears. My mother did burst into tears, and she has been having constant panic attacks from it ever since. After it happened, when we were at the police station, she was terrified to get out of the car and said, "What if he's here? What if he's here and he tries to hurt you again?" And every single car that passed, she said, "Is that his car? I think that's his car." Every single person that passed, "Is that him? I think that's him. Don't get out of the car. He might hurt you." This is someone who, if she saw Officer Hernandez in uniform, she would burst into tears and run away. Even if she was being robbed, she would say, "Not him."
And also to add a little bit off the point of that, but when we were across the street and he pulled up and was honking at the other car, and after we realized it was him and he yelled out, you know, "Woohoo, I pointed a gun at your daughter," he sped off, and Jasmine's mother was, every car that was coming and turning or just driving by, she thought that was him coming back, you know, and she was just so shocked by it. She thought every car, even though none of them looked like his car, you know, mm-hmm. And yeah, it's pretty big.
Well, you guys went now. How much later did you go to the police station?
Right after we left.
Which, by the way, I don't recommend in such cases. I recommend going and, you know, writing down or speaking all the details of what you have seen and heard, getting all the witnesses' names and numbers, collecting as much video, and collecting all the stuff on your cameras and so forth. And then possibly later going to police, or you can go to the police station to specifically file a complaint.
And that's what we did.
A criminal complaint against an individual who identified himself as a so-called Officer Hernandez of the police force, mm-hmm. off duty, who waved his gun at you.
Offered to arrest us many times driving away in his car just for simply standing across the street. So not on the property.
Be more specific about it. What did he exactly say around this arrest situation?
Oh, when he was when he pulled up after honking, we realized it was him, and Jasmine's mom screamed, "He pointed down at my daughter," and he was like, you know, "Yeah, woohoo, it was great." He just kept saying, you know, you guys need to leave, or I'm gonna arrest you. I'm gonna arrest all of you." And there was like maybe 7-8 of us standing there, you know, and we're just like, what for? What? We're standing here by our car, getting ready to go. What? What do you know? And as he's leaving, fleeing the scene.
So he didn't clarify his...
No, not at all. He was just trying to... This whole thing was him trying to show that he has authority, you know, so-called his authority. And that's all it was him thinking, you know, go or stop talking or I'm going to arrest you. Like, what? No.
So the next thing that happened, Jasmine, was you... How soon after did you go to the police station? Did you walk there, drive there?
We drove there, my mother and I, and... well, actually, we stopped by my house to drop Shade off, and my mother's partner, who said that he needed to go home.
Because
we had to grab my phone, too. And then, but I just live right down the street from the Laurel Street Salvation Army. I literally live a couple of blocks away. So I would say it was about 6 minutes, 5-6 minutes afterward that, you know, after he did that in the street, you know, blaring his siren and screaming, "Woohoo, it was great, you know, yeah, I did that."
This was dusk, you say, of Tuesday?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it must have been the police station was closed.
Actually, there is, whereas the lobby itself is closed, if you walk up the stairs and you press 1 on the phone that's on the wall, you'll be given access to a sergeant that's on duty, mm-hmm. and that sergeant who took down our information was Officer Vasquez.
I don't think he's a sergeant.
old. I don't know if he
was... He might be a sergeant.
I don't know if he was acting as sergeant or if there was another sergeant in the building that told him to take care of it, but there is a sergeant on duty at the police station most of the time, even when the lobby's closed, if you have to report something.
So I was told by your mother that Officer Klein was involved interviewing her.
That's totally a possibility. I was being interviewed by Fox 35 News at the time in which he had her interview.
And so what sort of questions did Officer Vasquez, who, again, I must admit to a certain bias against because of the video of his either intentionally or negligently dropping a man in handcuffs face down to the sidewalk back this spring, which was actually sufficiently graphic that it was carried in the Sentinel in two different stories. So I've asked Chief Vogel repeatedly what the disposition of the investigation into Officer Vasquez has been, and I think as of recently as a month or two ago, he said, "Oh, there hasn't been any result yet." Obviously, they're still examining the video. It requires very careful analysis.
I bet it does. I bet.
Yeah. So I have a certain bias against Vasquez. But how did you know? Trying to set that aside, because this may be he may take an entirely different stance on this. Perhaps an opportunity to redeem himself. You never can tell. So how did that
come to Jesus
moment? Possibly
sacrifice and all that good stuff.
I mean, I'm being sarcastic, but I'm also being sincere because I don't know. You know, how did he question you? How did that come off? Give us a kind of a blow by blow.
When he was questioning me, he was most interested in which angle Officer Hernandez pulled his gun, and I believe the reason for this is that he wanted to know in what angles the cameras may have caught him doing this. And I do believe that he thinks that it's in his best interest to protect his brother, which I've known police to do. I didn't necessarily trust him. I just gave him an honest account of what happened from my perspective as far as being in that situation. He asked me, you know, very similar to what we've been talking about, at what angle we were at, who was around. What kind of gun he had, how far the aisle was in which he was shoving it into my back and periodically pointing it at my face before I got outside. And he actually, at the end, when I described how every single person in the apartment complex that faces the Laurel Street Salvation Army had a look of disgust on their face when they saw Officer Hernandez say, "Yep, I did that, and it was great, woohoo," and drive off, that was at the point when I actually saw some kind of spark of concern that he might actually be taking this seriously, because I do, you know, like,
well,
maybe
the public doesn't, you know, we don't want to offend the residents of an apartment, but certainly not all of them at once.
I'd
be carrying things a little too far.
Plus all the people going into the building, plus all the people coming out of the building, plus all the people just kind of standing around after the event. It's just, he did this in front of so many people. It's crazy. And even up until that point, I was thinking, well, maybe he had a hard day, you know, he probably didn't mean it, but at that point, I said to myself, you know, this is a person that just absolutely does not care at all. He is completely arrogant, and he's going to hurt someone.
Well, he already did hurt you, and he's caused you some injuries, and I'm hoping you can get some kind of recompense. I would think, though I'm not normally a fan of the criminal justice system, fair is fair, and if they're going to be going after homeless people for, sleeping in the park after dark, they should... three instances of which is now a misdemeanor.
Oh, wow.
They will now, should they go after Officer Hernandez for assaulting you at a meal without justification.
Assault and battery.
Yes, assault and then unlawful touching, battery. So, not that I expect anything will come of this, but I'd like to see a march to the police station. I'd like to see a mass of people demanding that there be charges filed, that he be suspended. That
I want to see his face plastered all across town.
And that actually was done 21 years ago in the case of Officer Butchie Baker, the guy who was shot and killed recently. He's become the great hero of the Santa Cruz area, along with Elizabeth Butler, although there's nothing particularly heroic about Butchie Baker that I've ever been aware of, particularly you've talked to the women who he molested.
I know. I talked to several of them, several of his victims and people that are close with his victims. I was very surprised.
Really? Recently? Or?
Let's see, probably about maybe several months ago in front of Whole Foods, there was a man that came up and I said, you know, it's just really sad that that guy got shot because he was one of the few nice cops. And I was going around town saying that until he said, are you crazy? Do you know how many women that man has hurt? And he gave me several different accounts. And there were a few women who I've talked to around town since that period of time which have asked me to not use their names so that they could remain anonymous, describing events in which we're extremely... What's the word I would like to use for this? Questionable interactions with this man based on threats of what would happen to them if they didn't comply.
Yeah, Baker was known for his frisky searches. We used to call him Sticky Fingers Butchie.
Huh.
And he actually falsely arrested me numerous times. The only successful lawsuit I ever had against the city was against Butchie Baker. And that was in 2002 when he arrested me for tabling in front of the New Leaf Market, because we were trying to stop the enclosed area that you now find between the two kiosks from going in by urging the city not to do it, because it was a public sidewalk, and they were doing that to drive away young people who were using it as an assembly area, hanging out. It's similar to what they do when they remove benches,
mm-hmm.
and make certain areas unsuitable, fence off areas that are green areas. For example, where the drum circle was 4 or 5 years ago has now been fenced off across from CVS. In any case, you are listening to me go on at length, but this is also, we've been listening to Jasmine and Shade talking about an incident that happened on Tuesday at the Salvation Army, and commentator Colin Campbell Clyde is in the wings with a pungent analysis. Colin, any thoughts?
Well, a few things come to mind. One is that we know that it's been the pattern in American society for police to have immunity to commit crimes, usually under the pretext as a function of their duty. This is interesting that it was off duty, and like I said before, it seems absurd to me that he should be carrying a gun around everywhere he goes when he's not even on duty. I'm curious to see how the city is going to respond to this in the
if at all
the court system. Is there just sort of a blue line of silence that even an off-duty cop can get away with this kind of stuff because he's a cop and just the laws that apply to us measly citizens don't apply to the cops. The thing about this, like, I follow a lot of stuff on the internet, and incidents like this happen all over the country, all the time, every day, police overreaction to different situations, violence, aggression.
Again, I don't regard this as police overreaction. I regard this as a simple assault and battery case.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
He's not being called to deal with a crime. I suppose he regards it that way. Perhaps.
Oh, it's absolutely criminal what he did, for sure. I guess what I mean by saying overreacted is a situation that didn't really call for. I mean, what's the problem? There's no problem there to begin with. And to just completely fly off the handle like that.
Again, remember, how would you respond if somebody who didn't have a badge did this?
Oh, absolutely.
Would you call it an overreaction? I don't think you would. I would think you would say, and the police were called and they said, oh no, we know that we're not going to arrest him because even though he went by and went nee 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 later.
I'm not trying to use that language.
And I'm not being critical. I'm just saying. Sure. I think there's a mindset that we all share that we have to somehow resist and step out of because of the fact that he's a member of the police force. That's the problem. So we start being more genteel in our language.
Yeah, there's an assumption that the police have like a legal imperative to use physical force, and that's part of this whole sort of cult of cop worship.
He was acting like we were getting out with stolen goods or something. You know what I mean? Like we were concealing thousands of dollars. That's what he was treating us like. You know, like
for food.
Yeah, exactly. For food that we weren't even concealing at all.
You know, it's like, how dare you want to have some extra food to eat?
That we didn't finish, right?
Right. So, whatever the pretext of it, I mean, this is some guy who gets off on acting like this and going around being Mr. Big Tough Guy and scaring people.
And the real issue is why, of course, the police department is letting him get away with it. The answer, of course, is because we're the police and we do what we want. But the issue is really beyond that, why the community is letting him get away with it and how we can stop this in the future. And that's what I've been grappling with for decades and in these issues, because I don't have any simple answers. I tend to believe that exposing this stuff publicly on the air like we're doing now is a good first step. Organizing mass protests, contacting the media, posting this stuff on the internet, I put up.
I think we need to give them hell about this at the next city council meeting and tell them like we want something.
And
done.
Ironically, the next city council meeting is a special city council meeting
about
the public safety task force report, which I was actually going to be talking about shortly.
Quick comment about that. I attended some of those meetings. I thought it was really interesting to see a room full of people talking about drug addicts and the homeless and this and that, and not a single representative from the constituency that they're discussing, that they're drafting policy that's going to affect people from the underclass, people who live in poverty. Not a single person on that committee. So, you know, it's sort of like a bunch of white people getting together and let's have a discussion about what we're going to do with all the black people in town. And should we invite some black people? Who cares what they think?
Well, also, it's treating the black people as the crime problem. Or, in this case, treating the homeless people as the crime problem.
Yeah, those two things get conflated. You talk about crime, you talk about the homeless, and it's almost the same discussion.
What's interesting, though, is this whole issue of public safety is it's a real issue, I would imagine, for the people who witness the, if your account is accurate, the assault against you. Who, by whoever it happened to, whether it's a cop or
that's
crazy biker or a man in a business suit or an old lover, whoever the hell it was an act of violence, it was an act of aggression, and it was an act which had no consequence in terms of any police response.
It's totally reckless. So
because it had no consequence, it is an example of the kind of thing that really would frighten a number of people. Now, instead of examining this kind of stuff, what the Public Safety Task Force, as I like to call it, is doing is churning out recommendations that were essentially funneled into this group, which are based upon the premise that if you are sleeping outside, if you're a poor person, if you're a homeless person, then you're a criminal, because what you're doing is criminal. You're sleeping outside. And if you're using drugs or drinking, that's criminal, because we declared it a crime in this ordinance. So therefore, it's a crime. And therefore, this is an example of the rising crime rate. And therefore, something has to be done. And what they use, of course,
they got to spend that money some way.
Well, there's no money to spend. It's hysteria that they're generating in order. They're trying to get more grants to spend more money.
And
they want
more
cops. What they really want is to eliminate a class of people from this area that they think lowers the property values, makes it bad for business, and makes upper middle class people, or even middle class people, some of them nervous in their neighborhood. And also there is, of course, a rising property theft rate, which may or may not be connected with homeless people. There's no clear indication either way as far as I can see. And we didn't really learn too much about that. So this is coming up on Tuesday at the City Council. I believe it's an evening session, but let me find out online to give folks the exact times. Look and see what's cooking with that. It follows, 6 months of biweekly meetings, which have happened through, as you were saying, Colin, a hand-picked group of people by Mayor Hillary Bryant.
The whole thing is a dog and pony show, because it's a foregone conclusion before they even started what the ideological direction of their report was going to be. So all this stuff about, like, oh, let's have people who are experts come in and give speeches, and we'll do all this studying about it. These people were selected to begin with because they were going to, give the elite politicians in town what they wanted to hear.
Well, exactly. Why not go spend time with these people? Why not go sit in the park and talk with the homeless people, how they feel about it? Why don't they do things that, and exactly like you brought up earlier, why don't they bring that? Not one of the person on the people on the council were in that position themselves. So
they
just
had someone who's like a former drug addict come in and speak once as like their weekly lecture series that they would listen to. But
I guarantee you most of them drink alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
They all drink wine and get wasted with their, rich white friends as well.
Exactly. Do a little coke on the side.
Exactly. Pills, whatever it is. Want to get high this weekend, so I'm going to say my back hurts and get some Valium, whatever.
Right. Shake a doctor down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what goes on in the middle class, and that's considered respectable. And
of course it is.
Yeah. So what the city council study session, that's what it's going to be on December 3rd. There are actually two meetings, one's at 4 o'clock, but it's not about this issue. It's 7 o'clock. There's a general business study session to accept the final report, research findings, and recommendations, and provide direction as appropriate. It is not clear that this study session, since it's being called a study session and not a special session, will allow any public input whatsoever. So it may
There's been kind of a cone of silence around the Public Safety Task Force Committee, whatever it's called, that, they're very adamant about this is not for public. I tried to engage some of the people in the task force in a conversation during one of the breaks, and I was told no uncertain terms there's no public comment at this. I wasn't even trying to do public comment. I was just trying to.
Well, it is true that the actual task force itself had no public comment, except I think they had two public comment sessions throughout their 15.
Other than that, you walk into this 15, the community room over at the police station over there, and it's like they've got the tables arranged so that the people sitting in the audience are the people on the committee have their back to you. And I thought that was a really interesting sort of spatial signifier of a power dynamic.
It was a very bad and, very obvious elitist approach.
Sort of like, we're going to turn our back to you. We're not concerned.
But the issue that I'm looking at now is the study session coming up on Tuesday, which is a city council study session. It's not a task force session. The task force was not a Brown Act group, which means the Brown Act, which allows the public to be present, to make public comment. That's required at city council sessions, except possibly for study sessions.
So here's another thing.
Okay. Let me finish this first.
Yeah.
Study sessions, I have to check on this, but I'm wondering if their use of the word study session, because it doesn't mention any public comment being allowed at this session. And this is not the task force meeting. This is the city council meeting, which is the government that your taxes pay for, which is a group that is supposedly controlled by state law. Even special sessions of city council, and this is a special session because it's not every second and fourth Tuesday, which is when normally the city council meets, and that's when you have public comment for 3 minutes on each item, supposedly, though they cut it back to 2 minutes, and public oral communications on subjects that are not on the agenda. This looks like a special meeting that is being redubbed a study session, but I'm going to actually give a call to Councilmember Micah Posner, who probably won't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but maybe he will know what's going on. Sorry, Colin, you have got some thoughts on this?
I lost it. Train of thought is gone.
Sorry about that. It happens to me, too. I'm going to try calling him at home and see if we can earn his cell phone.
Let's get Micah Posner.
And see if we can actually get his butt in gear.
The Verizon Wireless, the number you dialed has been changed, disconnected.
Perhaps I better double-check the phone number. Let me also ask people who have been listening, if anyone has any comments and you'd like to call in and you're listening on Thanksgiving, because that's when the show is actually airing, give a call to 427-3772, and you can talk with Jasmine, with Shay, with Colin, with me, perhaps even with Daniel. You never can tell. We may, prompt a few words.
Get a word
from
or two out of it. So the other thing I just remember, the other thing I wanted to say is about this, the Public Safety Task Force. It seems like kind of this shady thing to me in terms of how it's taking all these people who weren't elected and then getting them to basically decide policy, because now the city council is going to take their report and make policy based on the deliberations of this unelected body. And like you said, they've used this language around, you know, a study session or whatever to get around the Brown Act.
Okay, well, let's see what we can get a mic on the line here, which is sometimes harder than at other times. This is a council member who is perhaps somewhat more accessible than other council members.
Hello, this is Micah Bosner.
Not
you reached my cell phone.
This is his machine.
Leave me a message and I'll get back to you. Thanks.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
I'm sure all five of the people.
Hey, Micah, this is Robert calling, and I'm doing this on the stream of Free Radio, so perhaps at least three other people are listening to this show. You never can tell. I've got two questions for you. One, I have in the studio with me Jasmine and Shade...
Byron.
Byron, who... Jasmine herself was assaulted by an individual who later turned out to be Officer Hernandez, badge 137, at the Salvation Army feed on Tuesday. You got a, I guess I gave you a flyer about that today at the homeless feed at the Civic Auditorium. No charges apparently have been filed, nor has the officer been removed from duty for this assault, which involved... whacking the food out of her hand. I'm going to have encourage you to give her a call, but also just to make sure that this officer doesn't remain on duty, at least during the time when charges should be pending, or at least...
Mention the gun as well.
Please. Yeah, apparently, as you know, the Jasmine and Shade and other witnesses, at least two others that I have talked to, claim that this officer... waved a gun in her face as she attempted to leave because she was trying to take a plate of food out of the Salvation Army feed on Tuesday afternoon. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And, Jasmine, if you want, give a call to Micah at 227-4772, which is a number which she doesn't mind making available, I think, to the public. And you might want to get in touch with him and... tell him to get off his butt and do something about this. The second question I have is the City Council's task force meeting on December 3rd. Is this a session where there is a public comment section? Because it looks like if it's a study session, there may not be such a public comment section. Special sessions, as I understand it, have such comment sections as well as ordinary City Council sessions, but not necessarily study sessions. Please get back to me. If you want to call on the air, you can. We're going to be going till 8 o'clock today. It's Thanksgiving. And the phone number here is 427-3772. Thanks in advance. You can call me at home at 423-4833. And if anybody else wants to call in, please do. We've got no phone calls, and it's I know probably people are busy falling asleep after all the turkey eating, but...
or football!
Yeah, or watching.
Watch football.
Or watching football. It's possible.
Or giant balloons floating down the street.
Yeah, pointless things that people... Yeah.
So we are getting into the task force.
Meanwhile in Pakistan.
Getting into the...
right?
Drones. I'm turning down... including my own, actually, so I can... proceed here. So the task force is coming up. I'm going to be talking about the report more fully on Sunday for those of you who want to look at this piece of dreck, which is, you know, it's essentially the kind of thing the Downtown Association likes to put out. Don't give out money to panhandlers, send them to other cities, we don't want these people around. And it's been risen to a new toxic level. But I'll go to the specifics of their recommendations and also my response to a critique issued about this. By Steve Schnarr and others on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, has a critique issued about the task force report, which I think is worth looking at, but doesn't really go far enough, as I'm concerned. Again, liberals often want to say, oh, yes, there's a public safety problem, but we have to deal with it in more compassionate ways, instead of saying, what public safety problem. You're talking about the problem of guys with guns assaulting women with plates of food, or homeless people outside with their sleeping bags, or shooting people down and then the police not being able to find out who did it, as happened 4 days ago, according to the Sentinel. It was some guy who lived here, 57 years old. And
I think it was super necessary.
Is why I think we need a more serious critique than the ones that have been given. I mean, you'll hear Don Lane and Micah Posner saying, well, there are better ways to go about public safety, but it's not about public safety. Public safety is a cover for what's going on, and that's something we have to look at and understand. But that'll be something I'll be talking about on Sunday. But, of course, if you have any, and you've already made your comment, if you want, call in, but if anybody wants to follow up on that, that's fine. I want to move next, though, to the sidewalk snatching stuff that we witnessed 2 months ago, and the ordinances that were passed but apparently are not being enforced very strongly by the city police. That is to say, the ordinances say you can only have 12 square feet in which to perform. You have to be 14 feet away from
all these numbers just getting shouted at you every time.
Well, it's
14
feet. They made it much more consistent for you, except for the 12-foot square area you have to be in. But 14 feet away from all these things, is they claimed that was to make it easier for people who can't do numbers. Previously, it was you have to be 10 feet away if you're doing a performance or you're doing a political tabling or you're vending. But 14 feet away if you're one of the evil panhandlers or the lazy loiterers who sit down on the sidewalk. And so they figured that, well, the best way to clear up all this up is to restrict everybody to 14 feet. I've also noticed that they've put in these new red panhandler punishing or spare change slashing meters. I've seen at least two new ones or two replaced ones in the last 24 hours. One of them is in front of, Dale Williams or near Dale Williams. Another one is up at the corner of SoCal and Pacific.
I thought the city had decided that was some like a failed program.
Well, if so, it's been suddenly given new life, apparently. But I will say this for those who are interested: I was at the feed today at the Civic Auditorium, and I was served pumpkin pie by none other than my old friend Lynn Robinson.
Hey, wasn't that interesting, Lynn Robinson at the homeless
next mayor of Santa
yeah.
Cruz. I did give her a copy of the flyer I was giving out, which I think I may have showed it to you.
I don't think I have
it with me. I wrote a little something very quickly when I got the phone call from you and your mom regarding the issue of this assault that you suffered and the subsequent taunting, which makes it kind of like a hate crime as far as I'm concerned.
Which is what it felt like, for the record.
As he brought up racism right away and threw it in my face when I asked him his badge number, like, what? Come on. Is that what you're experiencing and you're trying to put it on me?
I think
that's racist when somebody pulls a gun on you and then you want to know who they are.
Yeah, right? I just want to know your badge number.
That's what racism is. Yeah, it's really horrible.
I mean, I'm talking about the follow-up on this that happened, which sounds to me like, an additional level of... this would cause, I think, a more harsh sentencing if there were a just system that... Well, I don't think it's a just system to send people to jail necessarily, but let's assume that the same system was used with somebody who didn't have a badge and if they had that authority, then and they then were taunting you about it afterward, that would mean a basis for an extended or expanded.
That's definitely what it felt like. I mean, the entire experience felt like, haha, I'm a cop, I can get away with this, and there's no way you can bust me. I can say this in front of all of these people, I can taunt you, and there's nothing you can do to me. And at no point in time, I had to find out for myself that he was an officer. It was the gun that gave it away. But at no actual point in time did he say, I am a police officer, I am on duty.
Because he probably wasn't on duty.
No.
But, what I've just handed you is a flyer I gave out today at the homeless feed down on...
Which I appreciate very much, by the way.
Oh, the feed or the flyer or both?
Both.
Right. It was pretty good. The feed was okay.
Awesome.
I didn't get any stuffing or potatoes or anything, nor cranberry sauce, but I got some turkey and, a guy gave out a lot of these flyers. What the flyer says is... And it's inaccurate. It says, yesterday, Officer Hernandez, it was actually the day before yesterday, reportedly pulled a gun on a woman leaving with a plate of food at the Salvation Army Thanksgiving meal. If your answer is yes to any of the questions, these questions, meaning the questions below, please give your name, a contact number, or email, and a place you can be reached. Please print clearly, blah, blah, blah. And I left five questions. One was, did you witness this Hernandez drawn gun incident? Has your property been taken in the last year from your campsite or by persons by authorities? Have you been ticketed for illegal camping? Have you been harassed by private citizens for appearing homeless? Have you been refused services for what you suspect was your homeless appearance anywhere? And unfortunately, yeah. Of the many hundreds, several hundred flyers I actually gave out, I was at it for a while, I got four or five responses back. But, you know, I'm glad I got it out anyway, and everyone seemed to be somewhat, well, many people seemed somewhat shocked at this. And I got a very positive reaction. Only a handful of people refused to take the flyers. I'd say 20 or 30 out of the several hundred people that I passed them out to. So,
really?
Those are pretty good numbers. I mean, I've done things downtown like handing flyers out. And, you know, it's like Pacific Avenue people walking by, it's usually about 50-50. So if you've got a majority of people taking a flyer, that's good.
Big time, yeah. It was an overwhelming majority. We got a couple of interviews, which I'll probably be playing on Sunday. I've got some interviews I want to start playing now. And again, I want to remind you, we have in the studio the individual who claims to have been attacked by Officer Hernandez. We know police don't do this, so obviously she's a liar and a coward. And she's a very husky woman, although she appears to be thin for a husky woman, and probably some sort of sorceress-ish disguise.
At 17,
that's un-American liberalism when you don't like it when the cops pull a gun on you.
Yeah, well...
All right.
Well, it isn't even the cops. It's somebody who...
It's
somebody with a badge who isn't actually acting like a cop, but who's using the fact that he is a police officer as protection for his private...
He's only a cop when he's at work.
National.
Yeah. Well, it is true that off-duty police have the right to do stuff of different kinds, but usually you want to, you know...
Warn, non-assault and battery.
Warn someone. Actually, when police officers draw their guns, they're supposed to make reports. So this would be good for you to make a direct complaint to the Bob Aronson, the so-called independent police oversight guy, who doesn't do any independent police oversight, really. But, again, it goes into his record. So the fact that you made a report about this does not amount necessarily to an internal affairs complaint, although it should. So what you need at some point is just to search in a very brief statement. You know, Officer Hernandez drew his gun, knocked a plate of food out of my hand, and then abusively taunted me 5 minutes later while not in uniform, and then just a very simple sentence or two about this, and then just turn it in as a report to this guy, Bob Aronson, who will send it to the police department, and they will get it'll get deep six, but unfortunately they're required by the law.
They're going to get right on it, man.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true. I mean, no doubt they'll be all... You know,
Chief Vogel, we're going to get money. He's going to lose his job.
Chief Vogel will move very swiftly to drop it into the circular file. But it'll stay in his record for 5 years. So that's not a bad idea. Assuming your report is accurate and you're not hornswoggling us with a series of lies and deceptions. So we don't know.
Very, very detailed and from, you know, many, many people on it.
It's quite a conspiracy to attack poor Officer Hernandez. Perhaps a racist conspiracy?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? You know, yeah. He was projecting himself, maybe.
Now, it's true. I do not have Officer Hernandez in the studio. Officer Hernandez, if you'd like to call in, please do. 427-3772.
Then there'd be tons of people listening.
I don't recall that actually I've ever had possibly once or twice had a police officer call in. But it doesn't happen because of probably policy, but also... I like to think it's because we have the facts, and they are unfortunately not in favor of the individuals I'm often criticizing. But you can call in, whoever you are, listeners, assuming there are any of you out there, at 427-3772. 427-3772. We can even have people in the studio calling in and talking to themselves, which is really
kind of
what we're doing. But let's get back to the fate of the street shrinking ordinances, the sidewalk shrinking ordinances, and also we want to get into
the incredible shrinking ordinance itself because they're not enforcing it.
Now that's what I wanted to ask, Jasmine. Have you been out, Shade?
We saw it enforced today, actually.
In what way?
Three cops. Oh yeah. Okay. So there was a gentleman sitting down on that street that the New Leaf's on. There's Pacific and then that
SoCal?
Street. Is that SoCal already?
Yeah,
okay.
So.
Oh yeah, SoCal. And I believe the law is you can't sit down but 25 feet away from the curb. So he was down that street, SoCal, almost more than halfway down. He was sitting down with his dog, petting his dog.
Was he sitting next to a building?
Illegal
to sit within 14 feet of a building.
Everywhere
in the downtown business district.
Anyway, he got
harassed. But that is not the street shrinking ordinance. That is a long-term ordinance that is equally bad, in fact, even worse, because it goes after people who are, you know,
I was just talking about somebody being harassed by the police, which was completely unnecessary.
Well, tell me, what else did you observe? What time
just three cops ended up showing up being total douchebags. But, I mean, just three cops for that, for one man sitting there doing nothing.
And what happened to
he wasn't even sitting. He was packing his bag. He was, like, he was in transit with his dog. He had a dog in a bag, and he was, you know, doing his thing. So
we actually have this recorded. I stood there and recorded the incident to make sure that he'd be treated okay. And it's funny, as soon as they realized they were on camera...
Perfect gentleman.
Oh, of course.
They definitely changed their attitude dramatically.
How did it change?
I would say it went from screaming in this individual's face for him to sit
even
down.
Even asked him to stop screaming in his face, like, multiple times.
Yep, asked him multiple times to take his voice down, that he did not have a hearing problem. It was not necessary to be yelling at him at close proximity. He still continued to shout orders at him, in which there's no way he could have understood all of them and followed them all at once. They came out way too rapidly. Rapid fire screaming.
Showed up. His car showed up.
But it was Winston. Officer Winston was the yeller. I'm pretty sure he's the one that yelled at me, that incident when I was holding a small child in groceries on Pacific Avenue.
Officer Winston is a notoriously dutiful police officer in that regard. He likes to make sure that those who are hard of hearing hear him and how.
I've noticed that on several occasions, but luckily the photography and video made him decide not.
Multiple people there decided.
Did you actually get the shouting before they moderated their voices?
I did not.
You want to first
That's
be a little sneaky and then whip out the camera so you
I
can
know.
Get the you can show the before and after photos, you know, which is sort of nice.
There's that moment where they look at the camera and their eyes are all wide, like, oh, I'm on camera.
Oops. Yes, the oops moment. It's always nice to get, and post it if you can too. Again, that's what I've been urging people at the Huff meetings for the last year to do, or actually the last 3 or 4 years, is to post video, because that is the real way of informing the community. You can talk all you want to about the civil rights of this and the civil rights of that, but if they see somebody being slammed face down to the sidewalk, there becomes a real dialogue starts to happen.
I would definitely like to add that is one positive outcome of this entire experience with Officer Hernandez is, you know, I will record every single police officer I see talking with any other person on the street in my capability now because of the situation I went through. Whereas before, I would only do it if I heard shouting or if I saw someone being abused. I will do it every time.
Or more than one cop for a small situation.
I will do it every time now, and that's a promise I'll keep.
And if anyone out there is doing this and you are posting this, please let me know at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we have a website there which hasn't got too much video, but has a little. Colin, do you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, so I just wanted to clarify that what you were referring to before, the sidewalk snatching ordinance, is the ordinance which is targeting the street vendors, people who are selling their art downtown and that sort of thing, and restricts the amount of space they can use, and they can't put blankets on the ground, and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Have you guys play music downtown?
We sell stuff sometimes as well. We're both leather crafters and bone crafters, and have sold stuff but haven't experienced being messed with while selling things.
Have you guys seen that law being enforced at all? Like, witnessed it with other people?
Yes, today that same officer that was yelling at that gentleman...
Short Officer Winston?
Yes, Winston was talking to... We were walking by, and he was telling some people there, you know, something about they were doing something wrong. Remember when we walked by those kids were selling rocks?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
There was not crack, but, you know, rocks from the earth.
Gems.
Yes. And Yeah, he was telling them what's up and enforcing the law a little bit.
Was he enforcing by writing a ticket, or was he enforcing by just saying...
It looked like he was just speaking to them very rudely about what they were doing wrong.
That's what they're doing. I think they are running around either rudely or politely or sweetly, telling people that they have to be their own little internal cops to crowd onto the 5%.
The only reason I say rudely is because the reaction I was seeing on the other people there just seemed to be like, okay, man, like we
doesn't matter. But my point is that they're not citing at the moment... and I think that's your point, too, Colin.
I was downtown with a table for Restore the Fourth, which I'm going to put a plug in really quick, for Restorational Organization, which is addressing the bulk data surveillance by the National Security Agency, which was revealed in the Edward Snowden whistleblower documents. So we're trying to stop the government from spying on us. And so I went downtown, set up a table. The table is clearly illegal. And if any cops are listening to this, just take note. We are tabling with an illegal table, which is well over...
But you haven't been bothered, that's the point.
And not only was I not bothered, but two officers in foot patrol on uniform walked right past me. So, well, and this was after the anti-vendor law.
It's probably because you look clean cut. These kids looked homeless as fuck.
Right.
Well, it could have been also the officer, because Officer Winston tends to be pretty...
Not that you could tell over the...
Winston tends to be pretty...
I look like Clark Gable.
Winston tends to be pretty intense about this stuff. So I will have to keep our eyes open, but I think that one of these days they are going to crack down, and when they do, I think it's going to cause a mass flight, or at least fear, among people who are... may find it difficult to cram themselves into 12 square feet of space. And also, what with these new red no panhandling meters, they are regarded as artwork. And therefore, they are like the trash cans, now become the creators of forbidden 14-foot zones around them, making it even less... possible to set up,
because you're not allowed to set up around
you can't
bench
sit down
from a certain amount of feet from benches
feet,
or artwork.
14 feet. You can't do it within 40 feet of any of it.
That seems kind of a stretch to call that artwork. I mean, can you just go around declaring random objects artwork now? Like this chair.
Well, I'm artwork. So
all I know is
me, right?
That when Catherine Byers, one of the more liberal council members, so she said, although she voted for a lot of this shit, was on the city council and she was asked that question, she said, yes, the red meters that steal money from the spare changers and give it to the poverty pimps is regarded as street art, which is is an interesting.
That's
sort of like defining homeless survival as a public
is
menace.
Is a phone booth artwork? Is a fire hydrant artwork?
I don't think
all of the parking meters.
You're going to have to talk to Catherine Byers and the city council about that.
Unless they'd like to call in right now and let us know.
Sure. But I don't think we have any callers at the moment. But again, 427-3772, if you're listening on Thanksgiving, is the number to call.
The masses and masses of people who are listening to us right now must want to call.
Yeah. So here's a little from the city council, the last city council debate on the sidewalk shrinking ordinance. I didn't play much of it. I'm not going to play too much. I'm just going to play a little for some commentary, and I'm going to make my own commentary, too. If anybody has any commentary, please call in 427-3772. Or if you've had any experiences, have you been cited? Have you been harassed? Particularly, have you been cited? Or have you seen anybody cited? That is one of the issues. Although, harassment can be as bad as citing. I mean, you didn't get cited today, Jasmine, but I don't think that really matters to you. You got assaulted, you got battered, you got taunted, and you got frightened.
Pretty much a terrible evening.
Yeah. I mean, I want to get onto this, so go ahead.
This is about the street vendor ordinance, which is, I am... just totally excited as a little geeky fanboy that I can relate this to an episode of Doctor Who, and it's the episode where the cubes show up and there's just these like black cubes everywhere. They're just everywhere, and they just came out of nowhere. They're everywhere. They're on the ground, scattered all over the place. Well, so at first it's like this big panic, like this is an alien invasion, but then nothing happens. The cubes don't do anything.
Thank you.
And eventually the cubes like come to life and attack people. But here's
nice
the point of the analogy is that the cubes wait a very long time before coming to life and attacking people. So people become complacent about them and are no longer afraid of them and just have them in their houses and that sort of thing. So they're very vulnerable when the attack happens. And that's sort of like what's going on with the art vendor ordinance, that they're not really enforcing it right now. I think because they caught a lot of flack over it. They got bad press. They got
I don't know. We've had a lot of reflection on the whole thing. Yeah. But let me play what some of the city council discussion. We don't have much time left, so I'm going to do that. All right, this is the city council's last second discussion of the issue. It wasn't actually much of a discussion. They'd already prepared to ram it through. Frankly, it was prepared for a ram through on the first reading. There are two readings to laws in the city's passage of laws. This one has there was very few people in the audience the first time because very few people knew about it. The second time, due to some organizing and some discussion, there was a larger group of people. Street performers filled the audience, and you can hear the audience shouting and talking. And this actually led to some group called the Civanonymicon. Two guys wanted to say, people are just not civil to our city council. You know, they're just not being polite. And that's why our city council is having difficulty coming to decisions, because they're just intimidated and upset and concerned. And
they're
people too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have feelings.
And of course, let's hear a little bit of the city council. This is Micah Posner, a council member who actually opposed this law, to his credit.
Yeah, community standards. And I agree about that. But it seems to me like your first, you know, sort of the first standard for community standards should be that they're understandable. And another artist said that, by the way, I really appreciate everyone coming out. I mean, we as a city did not do a good job, as Councilmember Lane said last time, in soliciting the opinions of the art community. And so we should have reached out to you, but I really appreciate that you reached out to us and came to the meeting. I wrote down some of the quotes that struck me. One of the artists said that she's respectful of laws when I feel that they are fair. And I think that's how most people behave in the city. And inasmuch as the council makes understandable, clear laws, then I think people respect them. You know, however you feel about smoking, it's pretty obvious when smoking or not smoking. But in this particular case, it seems to me you would have to have a tape measure. You would have to have a watch. It'd be helpful to have a T-square to know what the angles are for the buildings in order to understand where exactly you were supposed to exercise your First Amendment rights to show your art on Pacific. And that doesn't seem reasonable to me.
No.
So even though I agree with the idea that we should set community standards, I don't see how we can set a community standard that the community we're trying to regulate won't reasonably be able to understand. I mean, would any of us be able to go on Pacific and figure out easily where we would be allowed to display our art? It took the staff from the last presentation many hours to come up with a sheet about where you were able to perform. Many staff hours. That's the GPS systems and computers and maps and all that. And even then, they made a small mistake about the trash compactor thing or whatever. So I don't... You know, I don't want to expand this ordinance, but I don't think the initial ordinance makes any sense.
And this is the kind of applause that some regarded as, disrespectful and unfortunate. In fact, at Palo Alto City Council, they tried to stop people from applauding. They said, "We prefer you don't applaud." My response was to start clapping immediately, very loudly. And it actually encouraged other people to do so, which really is important. Because there's no other way, really, because of the 2 and 3 minute restrictions on public discussion, on public input. And even if you do the public input, they don't pay any attention, that they can feel any kind of a public response. You look like you want to say something, Colin. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, just that they get all freaked out if somebody yells something out of turn or something in the city council meeting. It's like this huge emergency. And, I compare that to the British Parliament, where it's part of the procedure to yell things out of turn, and that actually works really well because it gives you kind of an instant read on what the mood in the room about whatever they just said was. I think they do their parliamentary procedure a lot better over there, because they do like the questions of the Prime Minister, where he actually has to like answer questions like one after another after another. There's nothing like that that exists in the Santa Cruz City Council, where they don't, if you you know, have questions or concerns or criticisms, they don't have
to
answer
fair,
that.
I don't think the parliament allows members of the public to do that.
No,
you
no,
have
it's,
to be a member
it's
of the
other,
parliament.
It's other members
and
of the parliament.
And city council members, since they're on the parliament, is a huge body, and you know, it's admittedly they're much more freewheeling than the Congress or the state legislature. But a little more, perhaps, from the
yes.
Let's hear a little bit more.
We have to make regulations so people understand, or else they're not going to respect our authority. And I worry both about, you know, people being regulated unfairly, and also I worry about the respect to the city council. Because if we make a bunch of regulations people don't understand, then we're going to lose the respect of people, and then, you know, they're not going to believe us as far as setting community standards, and I think we need to keep that ability.
This is, of course, Micah flailing at straws, and I think actually pursuing lines of argument that are ineffective, but that, you know, sound nice. Oh, we should keep our respect. City Council doesn't care about maintaining the respect of street performers and vendors and poor people. In fact, they prefer that they, you know, overreact and get forced out, appear to look unreasonable, because they're actually responding in pain and anger to what they should be responding, which is the fundamental restriction of basic rights. The second thing, that the regulations be made clear, well, it actually is a clarification. When you make everything 14 feet, as I said earlier, there's a 14-foot forbidden zone all around many objects on the street, leaving only 5% of the area open. That's clearer, but it doesn't make it any better. So, I think his argument is... He, you know, to his credit, he's trying to draw arguments that would counter this, but it ain't working.
With regard to the idea that that just said, since Councilmember Matthews just said that it's not an attack on First Amendment rights, I looked up the First Amendment real quick. It says to abridge your freedom of speech. The synonym for abridge is to curtail your freedom of speech. We just had a disabled person come and say that he wouldn't be able to display his art because he can't carry a table. So, and if you think about this, how would you get a table or a large box or some kind of display device to Pacific Avenue if you didn't happen to live a block or two away? It seems like you would either need to drive and pay for parking and have a car and a driver's license and registration and gas money and everything else, insurance, or you'd have to have a bike trailer, which is a little bit rare, a place to park it. It seems like if we're going to prohibit blankets from Pacific, we're basically cutting off a certain segment of the population's right.
And what he's talking about is another aspect of the law that now says you cannot lay your stuff directly on the sidewalk or on anything that sort of flops on the sidewalk. It has to be a box, a table, something that is a so-called freestanding device parallel to the sidewalk. You don't need a table. That was not required. But you need something that is raised above the sidewalk, supposedly to avoid a so-called trip and fall hazard, which, of course, is absurd, because something that is higher than the sidewalk is more likely to be a trip and fall hazard. And, of course, the signs that now litter the sidewalk, the commercial signs you find on Pacific Avenue, seem to have increased in the last 2 months, according to my perception. These are the signs advertising the different businesses, big placards sitting on the corner. And I have heard at least one individual complain that people who are sight challenged, blind people walking around, there are a few of them, bump into these signs. I mean, they're all over the place. And I've actually been tempted to put in a Public Records Act request to see how many of these signs actually have permits. Because it would seem to me that if you're going to start monopolizing the sidewalk for commercial purposes all day where these signs sit, you would need to have such permits. That's my thought on that.
To exercise their First Amendment rights. I mean, I've literally curtailment of freedom of speech, and I'm not a lawyer, but I care about the Constitution.
Except when it comes to Cowles Beach or Needle Exchange or any of the other issues which Micah was either silent or on the wrong side of, and there are a number of such issues. But it's good to know that he did vote not only against the sidewalk shrinkage ordinance, he also last Tuesday voted against the ordinance that what did it do? It criminalizes public assemblies of more than 50 people unless you have a permit, and you will no longer be allowed to spill into the street unless you're prepared to pay huge fees for street closure, as well as the fact that the benefit of the doubt as to whether you get a permit will be no longer in favor of the applicant, as was the case with the prior ordinance. And additionally, there are numerous other restrictions on it, which I spent some time going through the ordinance, but I haven't yet come out with the final product. Those are three things I noticed in the ordinance, and we have a little bit of a discussion at City Council on that, which I don't think we have the time to play here, but perhaps some point in the future. In fact, why don't I move directly... Why don't I move directly to a few street interviews, because we haven't done too much of that. Although we have talked with people who spend a lot of time in the street, or certainly a certain amount of time in the street.
And we're listening to a couple of late-night guitarists here on Pacific Avenue, number 21st. Familiar faces. It is about 9:25, and it's a Thursday evening. Guitar and smoking illegally on Pacific Avenue. What is your name, miscreant?
Mr. Jack.
And you, of course, are?
The Archive Hunter.
A-H. Okay. Any hassles from anti-smoking vigilantes?
Say it again?
Any hassles of any kind?
Not so far. This is the first one, but I've been watching my back left and right every time I cross the street, so being safe.
$50 ticket, watch your step. Any comment?
They don't bother anybody at nighttime. That's what I see.
Excellent. Carry on. So here's a man sitting on a bench, backpack nearby, that says Human Rights Watch. You are newly arrived from Berkeley?
Yes, sir, by way of Reading, by way of Arcata.
And what have you found on your travels so far?
Not horribly anything bad, but, you know, just this undercurrent of police thinking they can intimidate people, and then once you stand up to them, they get baffled.
And where did you last stand up to a police officer?
Reading, California.
Describe for me how that went.
They pulled up to me on the sidewalk. I was flying a sign, Too Ugly to Prostitute, near Walmart, and, you know, I'm making $12.50 an hour, and they told me to get a job, and I told them, you know. Actually, he pulls up, and he turns the engine off. It sits there, doesn't say a word. I let it go for about a minute. I go, can I help you? He goes, oh, nothing, just watching traffic. And it's like, yeah, so am I. But why are you here? He goes, oh, I'm just watching traffic. I was like, okay, we just went back and forth. And he's like, you know, he's trying to intimidate me. Oh, no. We went back, and it was hilarious. He told me, huh?
What did your sign say?
Too ugly to prostitute.
Too ugly? That's not true. You're a good-looking guy.
It's a euphemism. And it's actually two euphemisms instead of metaphor. Yeah, anyway.
Think about that.
Yeah, but anyway, no, but it was funny, because then the other one came, and he told me I needed to get a job. I should get a job with more pride, and I told him to keep the pride. I'll keep the 4:15 hours so I can eat, basically.
Did they offer you work? Perhaps?
Oh, no, of course not. And then he told me I should sit down, because that's not work, while sitting on their bikes. Right, and I pointed that out to them, too, that they were sitting, and I was standing.
And how long were you in Reading?
Oh, about a month. I was only going to stay like a week, but the cop, like, not even that. And the cops told me I couldn't hitchhike, so I stayed there and made money.
And what kind of work do you do?
I used to do construction, but I haven't done it anymore. I'm freelance writing now and doing whatever I can, pick up odd jobs here and on Craigslist, you know, make some money.
Are you online?
I'm on Facebook.
And how can people catch your work?
James Richard Armstrong, and just hit my notes. And then, you guys can hook me up there. I wrote 260 articles in a year and a half in Berkeley about that fascist shit going on there.
And again, your name is?
James Richard Armstrong.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, sir.
So earlier tonight, I was at the Public Works Commission, or was it the Zoning Commission? I don't know. And they were considering an application for a marijuana distribution center, medical marijuana, in the location previously where the Lime Kiln Ken Sampson Club is held. Hey. And a lot of talk about all the wonderful security they're putting in. They're going to have cameras in the streets. They'll stop people from loitering. They have super, super, super security. They're going to stop people from sitting in their cars and smoking, and they'll bar them from the club if they're smoking in the area. They'll have a first alarm security guard marching up and down the street. And I went up there and talked about the unnecessary and degrading police repression that is being proposed as somehow necessary with no indication that it's really required. The drug war hysteria that has nothing to do with, you know, real dangers. 7-Elevens and banks are more likely to be robbed. And this whole demonization of the loiterer, the transient, which was a whole part of this presentation, is disgusting. But what I should really attack was Ben Rice and the audience, attorneys making big drug money, individuals making money in a dispensary with no real provision of marijuana for the entire community, just as bad as the restrictions being posed on these dispensaries. But let me leave my tirade and listen to this musicians, a dog, a violations of a space limitation in front of Forever 21. So, where are you all from?
From Vermont.
Hey, I remember. We talked earlier, right?
No.
It's
really different from ours.
And your hair is good, too.
Yeah, it is. Nice for you, man.
Thank you.
So, you document things going on in Santa Cruz?
I do a radio, well, oddish, greenish. Are you all from Vermont or just you?
No. Just I and my friend are here from Burlington, Vermont. We're just traveling through, enjoying beautiful Santa Cruz.
And you, on the other hand, are from?
Upstate New York. Upstate New York.
And did you hitch out? Did you fly out? Did you crawl out?
No, I crawled out of the Grainer Hole.
I was born.
Well, that seems pretty clear.
I took a bus from New York to Vegas.
And what brought you to Santa Cruz?
Well, I gave up, and I was like, yeah, there it is. I'm ready to live my fucking life.
And what have you found? How long have you been here?
I've been here in Santa Cruz for a day.
And what do you think?
I think it's pretty fucking cool.
Think of downtown ordinances, you know, like when they come. And your thoughts on this, in this bearing to, in relation to our theories, commonly misunderstood, you know, theories amongst the government.
What about?
It comes down to that.
What
right?
about Burlington? How are they doing over there?
Wonderful, actually. It's a similar mindset to Asheville, North Carolina. Here, I think, and it's one of those, you know, hippie. Happy.
You have no problems performing on the streets?
No, God no.
It's okay to sit next to a building.
It's a lovely place.
Not allowed to do that here.
I mean, there are laws against these things still, but people do them because this is a planet Earth.
In other words, you're a lawless man who's spreading your criminality across the nation.
And my seed.
I won't even get into that. Watch out for this guy.
Watch out for him. He's dangerous.
We've been talking with
him.
And again, your name is?
Say, ever.
Saul.
That's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it. You can touch it, but you can't hold it. It's mine.
May I please hold it?
No, I don't want you to hold it. I'm holding it myself.
Let me tell you some secrets.
Go ahead.
Blue 42.
There you go. America wants it. You got a ticket.
I got a ticket at the clock tower for smoking a cigarette.
Smoking a cigarette.
I don't have glasses, so I couldn't see the sign, but the sign said.
And what time of day or night was it?
It was in the morning.
And did the officer warn you, or did he just give you a ticket?
No, he didn't warn me. He just gave me a ticket.
How long ago was it?
A week ago.
And what have you done? Have you stopped smoking? Has it enabled you to quit smoking?
No. No, I still smoke.
Hope you
got one in the throat. For sleeping sleeping across from the clock tower approximately 3 days ago for sleeping.
Sleeping myself. Again. First you're smoking and now you're sleeping. Yeah. What's next? Breathing?
I don't know. Sanity is going downhill. So.
So have you?
I've been here 20 years and that's probably second. I've gotten to only 3 tickets for sleeping out here. So.
What did the police officer tell you?
Nothing. He's throwing me up. Can we pack up and leave? Pretty much, that's it.
I feel sleepy even hearing you. Have we been talking with?
Raven.
Thanks, Raven.
All right.
And it's another musical group at 10 o'clock on the Lee side of Cafe Campesino in front of Jane. To be loved. With a display device, illegally plays, but some nice music. And got two guitars, one drum, and 3 listeners, and 1 dog. 2 dogs.
I like it.
Here's every anarchist that sleeps but doesn't dream. We must sing, we must sing, we must sing.
And that's from the same group, additional guitar. So this group of 6 people were circled around near the Cafe Campesino, and then there's another group of 5 here in front of Forever 21. Look at little sort of collective circles. Looks like newly arrived travelers, although some of them seem familiar. And the weather is temperate. Rain is past. The sidewalks are dry, and there are no cop cars roaming the streets. At least I haven't seen one for the last half hour. Some hearings in the commission considering and eventually voting for a permit for medical marijuana dispensary, or I guess recommending that be done, and unanimously of the 5 commissioners who are present. A couple of people spoke about neighborhood concerns, so they kind of recognized they were being defeated. There were no Take Back Santa Cruz mobsters in the audience. I spoke. I think you'll be able to hear some of it, although switch to slow speed. Unfortunately, the tape recording may not have caught everything. But here's an example of some of the discussion. For those who want to hear it.
This is the Planning Commission's medical marijuana application that it considered and approved, which will then go forward unless appealed to City Council. And I don't know that that's the case. I suspect we won't know for sure for a couple more days, although I'm not sure what the appeal deadline is. The previous application was fought hard and successfully by Take Back Santa Cruz groups and the Harvey West Association folks who have this notion, some of them, that marijuana is this deadly drug, or the sales of marijuana promotes loiterers, ne'er-do-wells, needle users, whatever. I'm not, in any case, a crowd of folks that create problems for their community, although they had no evidence whatsoever that this was the case with the previous medical marijuana dispensary, the Lime Kiln, or the current one that's still open, the Greenway dispensary run by Lisa Milano. So I think we are reaching the end, and I think we have arriving in the studio is Uncle Dennis Davey, who's going to be doing his From the Cream to the Dregs, musical madness for you, or perhaps sanity. And that kind of concludes this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides.